The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
The moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-o! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to At The Movies with me, Umar Pagan and PK Pagan. Now, I've never been able to quite understand the relationship between box office numbers and the social and cultural impact of cinema. Why do some movies like Avatar reach unbeatable heights when it comes to box office takings and yet have absolutely no lasting cultural footprint? What is it about movies like Top Gun and Jurassic Park that end up being cult classics? Joining me today to talk about movies and nostalgia and memory and why some films end up being ultimately forgettable while others move us beyond all reason is filmmaker Diffan Norman. So, Diffan, I've asked you here today because I wanted to talk about movies and their cultural footprints. So,
right.
And the reason being, with everything that's been happening since December, you know, we've had Star Wars, we've had Batman v Superman, we're coming up to a big summer blockbuster season of, well, the usual summer blockbuster movies.
Right.
And some of them will do really, really well in the cinema and then fade into obscurity. And some of them will have legs. They'll just last forever.
Can you name some that have had legs of recent times?
Of recent times?
Yeah.
I think Avengers is probably something that has legs because it did well to be a good movie, provide a certain amount of fan service, and appeal to a mass audience as well. So it wasn't just the hardcore comic geeks that were going to see it. To make over $1 billion, everyone's got to see it, right?
Avengers made $1 billion?
Over $1 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Jeepers.
So, you know, you're a filmmaker. You do this for a living. What do you think? I mean, what for you, what makes a movie with legs?
You know, I don't know, man. If we're going to take it to the Marvel Universe, let's say Spider-Man, right? I recently revisited Spider-Man.
The Sam Raimi one.
The Sam Raimi one, not the 70s one. And it did not feel like it did have legs. You know, it felt like, this is a dated film already. But it could possibly be because of the advancements Marvel has made technologically, right? In addition to the fact that there are several other Spider-Mans. Now, I'm not the biggest Marvel guy. I do love some of the films they put out. I really loved Ant-Man. But it could be a self sort of dilution that occurs within the industry itself, with regards to those films, of course. But for the longest time, I thought something like Indecent Proposal was an everlasting film. But, you know,
I thought so too.
You know, watching it when you're 12 and you kind of feel the jealousy everyone's feeling on the film, and then you watch it when you're 29 and things don't feel the same anymore. But at the same time,
well, that's the thing. You watch it when you're older,
right?
And you're like, this is actually a really stupid conceit.
Let me ask you a question, man. Did you have Mega TV?
I did have Mega TV.
Okay. All right. Well, if you had Mega TV, then you probably, you know, binged on HBO for a bit, and that is probably where you watched White Palace. Have you seen White Palace?
I have seen White Palace.
All right. Now, White Palace is kind of that film as well. You know, it's kind of like this erotic drama with a young guy falling in love with an older woman, Susan Sarandon, who, you know, moans in the film in the most unrealistic ways. But
that's about all we got.
Yeah,
just
sure.
A bit of moaning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a young man, I think I was probably 12 when I first watched that film. I felt it, man. I was like, man, this guy is going through some tough times. I mean, the story is pretty much Antara Dua Darja. But the film still lasts. I recently found a streaming version of the film.
Oh, did you really? Like, okay, so I haven't seen it since I was 15.
There are over-the-top moments, for sure, right? But, you know, the question you pose does make me think about, why does this film work for me? Is it because I'm thinking about those days when I first experienced it, or is Susan Sarandon really an attractive thespian that has the star quality that makes you revisit her work again and again and again?
I think those are some of the things that make these movies last the test of time. I mean, take Avatar is a very good example, right? It's still at the top of every list. No one's beat Avatar with regards to earnings capacity.
Right.
And yet, it has left zero cultural footprint.
I agree.
No
with
one
you, man.
Runs around dressed up like a Navi.
It's super weird. I mean,
but it's
makeup artists
no real
would typically use Avatar as a means of showing their talent, right?
Yeah, exactly. But so they're no real people, man. That's why.
They're not real people. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, still have Susan Sarandon to like hook onto.
You know, The Economist put out an article talking about how star quality isn't star quality anymore. Brad Pitt isn't Brad Pitt anymore.
But there are very few of them left, right? There's Brad Pitt. There's George Clooney. Right. There are a couple of people.
But here's where we make room for the Emily Blunts, for the Emma Stones.
Correct.
Whom I think, you know, do have star power. And is Superbad a classic?
I'd like to think so.
That's kind of where she got her start, right?
Yeah, Emma Stone. That's right. And then Easy A really kind of pushed her. Phenomenal movie.
Would you conclude? I mean, we can't conclude. Let's say, man, it's a combination of various different factors, right? It's star power and star. Okay, less ambiguous. Star power is what? I mean, it's the presence of the actor, right? I mean, it's their voice, it's their on-screen charisma. It's really drawing you.
It's a combination of everything, right? It's a bunch of looks, skill, presence, voice. It's how you sound. It's how you carry yourself,
right?
And that's what makes a star. It's the kind of thing they shove down your throat every year at American Idol, saying, "Oh, sure, you've got a great voice, but you don't have the complete package." A star has everything.
You know what? Maybe it is a star, because I'm just running through my head right now thinking about the films that I do watch over and over again. Casino, Jurassic Park.
But you're naming really, really high quality films.
Right.
And so what I'm thinking about is there are some movies with zero star quality.
Right.
Star Wars, zero star quality.
Okay.
It just managed to capture the zeitgeist of the 70s and somehow captured the imagination of a bunch of kids with flashy special effects and an age-old story.
Right.
And it just hooked people. And the reason I wanted to ask this question is because I don't know, watching a movie today in 2016, whether anything is going to move me in the same way. And that I find slightly depressing.
You know, in all honesty, it took a while before I was ready to come public about loving RoboCop.
Oh, man.
Or Back to the Future.
Do not be shy about your love for RoboCop.
I'm completely an open book right now. I mean, I don't hide any of my interests. But maybe it took a while for me to actually articulate the thought, you know, like why it had such an effect on me. I mean, the violence in that film and the drama of him. You know what? I am falling into the fact that these are quality films. But
RoboCop was due to Verhoeven, really. I mean, Paul Verhoeven.
You know, he's got a new film coming out with Isabelle Huppert, right? Yeah, and he wrote a book about Jesus. He wrote a biography about Jesus. I mean, I don't know if it's like Reza Aslan's Jesus of Nazareth, but I mean, Jesus is kind of a cool story, right? I mean,
that's a story with
legs. It's cinematic, just with every other prophetic story. But we're going off topic here.
We are. Yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah. No.
What makes a film have legs?
Like what makes a film have a lasting cultural impact? And also, what turns you on as a moviegoer? In that, I was excited about Star Wars. I enjoyed The Force Awakens, and it allowed me to recapture just a little bit of my youth, and I liked it. But I was thinking about walking into the cinema that night. I went for the midnight screening. And I thought back to the first time I saw Empire Strikes Back, because that was the first Star Wars movie I saw. I saw it out of order, right?
Because someone
shoved a VHS in my hand.
Where the hand falls off.
And someone shoved a VHS in my hand, and I watched it as a kid, and I was blown away. And I keep thinking every time I walk into a cinema right now, whether any movie is going to make me feel the same way. And I don't know if it is a function of youth and a function of childhood, or whether we are jaded, a bit spoiled.
I don't think so, because, I mean, this is a very good point you bring up, because we're talking about nostalgia here. We're talking about you revisiting your youth. There are a bunch of films coming out of North America right now that really, play with the sensibilities of cinema from the 80s, for example, right? There's the film The Guest. There was the film... But my point is that I kind of feel like these films have a sense of longevity to them, because I have watched them several times by now. But yeah, maybe it's taken an element of that, like a moment from a point of reference that is used as a language, as a medium to convey something new.
But this is the reason I'm convinced they keep remaking stuff.
Why? Because nothing's good anymore, huh?
Not nothing's good anymore, but they're trying to recapture that market, because they've announced a new Indiana Jones movie. It's the fifth one. He's like 80.
I don't think that should be.
They're going
to
make another one.
Back to the Future 4 is coming out, right? Is that real?
No, I don't think that's real. I think they've been toying with the idea for a long time.
Right.
But Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale
Godfather 4.
No, God,
Casino
no.
Casino 2, just kidding.
Never, never. But Bob Zemeckis and Bob Gale have both said, you know, we're done with the story. We're not interested in making this movie anymore, right? We've done Back to the Future. And I think that's an interesting thing, that these filmmakers are taking a hard stand and saying, well, you know, maybe you have the rights, but you can go do whatever you want, but we're done with it. Meanwhile, it is the original team. It's Steven Spielberg. It's Harrison Ford. It's the same guys making these movies again.
But they're different people now, man.
They are. They've all, you know, they've kind of grown up and grown old and different sensibilities.
I mean, you know, there was this really awesome article or podcast of Quentin talking about how we define remakes today as being really poor efforts at making at recreating cinema. Take The Fly, right? There was the 1958 Fly.
Correct,
right?
And Kurt Neumann, David Cronenberg and Fly. Cronenberg.
Who's one do you remember? Forget the Playboy short story. Nobody knows that
Nobody
story.
Knows that story.
You can wiki that thing, but Cronenberg's one is definitely memorable. There's The Fly 2, but no one really talks about The Fly 2 other than the fact that there's that morbid dog that's like half dead, coming alive. You feel sad, he kills the dog. But Cronenberg's Fly, I mean, maybe that's what cinema is, man. Just like that good quality moment that you experience. And perhaps there is less of that in that there is more quantity.
Possibly.
No, you don't think so? The same amount of films exist. The same amount of good films exist.
But they're buried under a colossal number of average movies.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I fight this idea a lot. I've actually discussed it with one of my really dear friends. I feel like there's a ton of good stuff. But at the end of the day, you need someone to curate all this material for you. Just like, you know, Criterion's doing a great job at what they're doing. And then there's that, what's that other label that's kind of Criterion-esque, but not really? What about things like Mondo Macabro, you know, or Drafthouse Films, you know? I mean, those guys are putting out, are curating a whole set of films that are new, that are, to a degree, classic. I mean, there's this film called Borgman by Alex Varmerdam. I've watched this film at least 5 times by this point, and it's really good. It's got its own rhythm. I mean, I can't answer this question. We can keep talking.
It's something I'm grappling with only because, I mean, don't get me wrong, it hasn't affected my appreciation of cinema.
Right.
But every time I get excited about a Ghostbusters movie that's about to come out, I find it difficult as a critic to not pull back to 1984 when I'm watching it with my mom in the cinema. It's the first movie that I've seen
in the cinema.
Yeah, I was a kid, like 4 years old, dude. And my mom. It was the first movie I went to see in the cinema, right? And yeah, and I'm thinking it's got to be more than nostalgia, and I can't put a reason as to, I can't pin down any other reason than nostalgia, and. Am I wrong in thinking that that's a bad thing? Because every time we read about nostalgia, we read about remakes, they make it sound cheap, that you have this emotion, that it's somehow manipulative, and studios are doing it just to take your money.
Melodrama.
And yeah, and I can't help but feeling a bit cheap.
Do not find anything wrong with the word nostalgia. In fact, the way we experience nostalgia today isn't quite nostalgic anymore. It's just an abundance of stuff that you're experiencing in 2016, for example, right? So, I mean, you're taking the interpretations of 2016 onto the material. There are films that I have seen, didn't care about, watched it again, loved it. And that's not nostalgia, is it?
No,
that's when you
have
that's when you have perspective or some renewed access to something that may not have been relatable at the time.
And it goes back to this notion that cinema cannot and should not be a one-off or disposable. It's got to be something that you keep revisiting.
Cinema's complete value is in the fact that you can revisit it and that you can experience it in new ways throughout time. Tough question, Uma. Hey, here's one. All right. So my whole re-experiencing of Malay cinema has no bearings in nostalgia. I'd be lying if I say I didn't fancy how the buses looked in some of the films from the 80s, you know, but at the same time, I actually feel like some of the films had a sophistication to the language that was more present with the times as opposed to right now.
But you're talking about Nusantara cinema as well, because
sure.
Malay cinema is steeped in a lot of nostalgia, sure. especially with the P. Ramlee stuff, sure, in the sense sure. that we're constantly bombarded with the fact that that's the golden age.
Right, right. But let's forget Ramlee for a minute. And yeah. Let's travel into the 80s. And you know, there's a film called Bayangan Cinta where Oji Ahmad Daud is a cabaret singer and she's invited to the school to become a music teacher. In the film, there's a face-off in the Bilik Guru with few other cynical teachers who are like, hey, you can't teach the kids pop music, you gotta teach them, you know, like old Malay
classical
songs or
stuff.
Like yeah or like patriotic songs. And she goes, hey, there is no problem with the song We Are the World, you know. And she defends it by saying the song was made to incite some kind of a consciousness in people to think about the poor. She kind of defends it in her most glamorous way with her red lipsticks, with her fancy glasses, and it's that's not nostalgia for me, but that's almost like that's really fresh for me, you know, Uma. So nostalgia doesn't necessarily have to be experienced as this sentimental, cheesy feeling. That's it's like a hamburger versus what, like lemak cili padi, right? Yeah, the one is like way easier to eat, the other is a bit more complex to make.
I think what you're getting at is the fact that we go back to this idea of cinema and revisiting cinema and re-experiencing old things in a new light.
Right.
And I'm on the same page with you.
Right.
I'm just talking about the new things. And maybe 15 years from now, when we're having this conversation again, we may think back to a movie in 2016 and say, you know what, I revisited 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Right.
And it turned out to be a lot more epic than I thought it was the first time. Could be. And it could be a milestone in cinema.
Right.
But maybe we're just too close to it to actually realize what's milestone, what's epic. Maybe we can only do it when we look back 30 years into the past.
But some of these films with legs, I mean, you have a ton of, you know, you have treasure troves of material, of literature, of, you know, of media just repeating over and over again how great these films are, what these films are about, or the descriptions that come with them, the massive coverage that these films have throughout the course of time. Not necessarily the fact that they had the massive coverage in that one premiering period, but throughout time, you know, some films accumulate a ton of text that, you know, like it or not, has some form of a residue on your mind.
Yeah.
And
the myth-making behind these movies.
The myth-making is a great thing. I mean, you know, there are boutique cinemas across the United States, and I think I would include Malaysia right now. There's a great group. I just want to name drop something. Wayang Budiman at Punca Alam, a little group of cinephiles who organize Friday screenings curated by a professor by the name of Dr. Norman Yusuf. He selects some of the best, I hate to say the word obscure, but they are obscure to my, you know, general world space here in Malaysia.
And I think they would be to the general Malaysian viewing audience as well.
Sure, sure. But I mean, see, experiencing these films aren't like experiencing nostalgia. It's experiencing something completely fresh, shot in a period. These boutique theaters in the United States, for example, there's a theater called Cine Family in Los Angeles where they revisit cinema that would have likely been completely off your map at that exact period. It's just bewildering, you know, to see cinema that just flashed by you. For example, you watch Project A with Chinese, you know, fried rice. It's a whole new experience, you know. It becomes, you kind of attach that memory to the film. And the fact that you slumped in a couch as opposed to a chair and you were with your friends. You know, there's a whole host of things that can occur in the appreciation of them. I mean, I think of Mega TV when I watch White Palace, or at least that's what I was thinking about when I watched it a few nights ago. I was thinking about Mega TV. I was thinking about walking to my neighbor's house, Ali, down the street, you know, asking him if I could play his drum set. Memory plays a huge deal.
That was filmmaker Diffan Norman, and we'd love to know what movies have left a lasting cultural impact on you. Tweet me on @UmaPagan or on @TheMoviesMY. You can tweet Diffan on @DiffanNorman. You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.